All right, so we set up last time, example 7.13. We're going to finish that one off and then work a few more examples of chapter 7 type problems. But before we do that, any questions about what's going down on Thursday?
Well, the homework 4 solutions.
They're on.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
I haven't looked recently.
Yeah.
It's 3 questions again. Three problems with.
Okay. With multiple parts. It may be 4 with multiple parts. I need to run through it again and check, try to figure out length, but it's 3 or 4 with multiple subdivisions of each. Of course, no calculators. What good are they going to do you? I'll bring paper for you guys. Make sure you indicate your solution. Don't give me 3 different ones. The easier you're able to make it for me to follow your work, the more likely you're going to get partial credit. No equation sheet.
And are we going to need that appendix table for inertial properties?
No, any inertial properties, if you actually need the numbers, I'll give them to you. Okay. Otherwise, be prepared to write, products and moments, I, X, X, I, X, Y, that, just like that. Any other questions about? All right. So let me get us back, try to get us back to where we left example 1. So we had this system that was a disk. In the center, slot, with springs that were both okay. It's rotating omega according to what caused by a torque. Slots H away from the center. I'm going to say, hey, this is A. See, we had an axis we defined. Okay, and we have the 2 masses. The disk has mass, which we are calling, we call that disk mass. I'm going to say this guy's M. The 2 springs are uncompressed, or they're at their equilibrium when this S distance is 0. And let's just say, hey, this is I, Z, Z. And I think we gave it as a capital M for that, or M1, M2, actually. 2. When I said, hey, that radius gyration is kappa, so that gives us I, Z, Z if we know the mass. Okay. We found kinetic energy to be for the disk, because it's in pure rotation, and we wrote the total velocity of that second point, which we called V2. that. Okay. We had, we kind of rushed through potential energy, so maybe let's talk through that again. Potential energy, capital V. Total potential energy here. What do we have?
The potential energy from our spring being compressed or stretched.
Which is what?
1/2 kS squared, but since we have two.
Yeah, so in general. And delta 1 and delta 2 are the distance of that spring from displacement from its equilibrium. Right. So in both cases, that's actually S. Our total potential energy is kS squared. And we don't have any gravitational because we're told, hey, assume this thing is spinning in the horizontal plane. So then what's our Lagrangian?
T minus V.
And let's... There's our Lagrangian, T minus V. All right. So if we're trying to find the equation of motion, which is our ultimate goal here, right, we had also picked at some point back here, we said, which order did we write them to match what we said? Theta, yes. Okay. So this is actually a theta dot squared, right? Omega here. That's how we define it. So we can write that. Theta dot squared, if you want. So now we have our Lagrangian written just in terms of our generalized coordinates, S and theta. Okay. Do we have any non-conservative forces here?
No, because we assume that there's no friction in the slot.
We assume no friction in the slot. We have a perfect pen, so no friction there. That guy. It's a non-conservative force. So we need to figure out, and I think we did last time, the kind of work this guy is doing, right? So what angle is this torque acting through? It's theta. So that one's pretty easy to see that, hey, that. It's just that. So I can directly on that angle. There's nothing else at play there, so we know that Q1 is that. And there's a few steps getting to that in the notes from last time, too. Okay, so we have kind of the pieces we need to form the equations of motion. How do we get there? Okay, I guess this is our first time through it, so let's do it. So let's look at each one of our generalized coordinates. So for Q1, right, Q1's theta, right? We need to write that So Q1 is there. Q2 was 0. We didn't have any generalized forces acting on in the S direction. So now we just need to fill out, do the math to figure out those terms, right? Take derivatives and such. You guys want to do that? Yes? No? Yeah, we can do it. We'll do one at least. After that, I will trust your calculus abilities. Not that I don't trust them right now. So when I'm working on these problems, I will start here usually, take the partial derivative, then take the total time derivative, and kind of solve for each piece independently, and then plug them back in, basically. It's kind of my procedure generally. So in that case, what we're looking for is the first. My black is dying. That black is dead. Trash can. Dead. There we go. The partial L with respect to theta dot. Okay, well, I can look through this guy. I'm going to have first term. Second term, I'm trying to do calculus on the fly here, so forgive me when I get this wrong. This is why I usually don't do it on the fly. Actually, I think I have it written out. I can just copy. So IZZ. The square. From this guy. Plus ML. Yes. Here's an S dot in there. I've already that out. Makes sense. L squared there. Yeah, that's it. Okay. So partial derivative is just holding everything constant, except, you know, just this partial with respect to that theta dot. So theta dot. There, we can take the total time derivative of that guy. Then that is the total time derivative. So in this case, we're going to have 2 S. S theta dot, M2 S squared theta double dot. Yes, that seems right. Everybody agree? I'm good at math. Okay. And, well, if we look at this guy, there's no explicit theta terms. So that's 0. And we would have Q1. So our first, we have what is L?
I think it's H.
H. Yeah, must be H. Sorry about that. What is my stop here earlier? Plus M. These are all M2s, right?
Yes.
That's... Right, I did my math right. That's our equation of motion for the theta generalized coordinate. I do have all these steps in the notes itself, so if you're distrusting of what I've done, to S, this has an S dot term too. It's the total time derivative. We can do the same thing for Q2. In this case, it gets a little bit easier. End up with M. Just dot. That only shows up in this piece here. That's actually an H. That. Okay. So in this case, we have an S showing up there and an S showing up over here. So we need to take care of those two. End up with MS theta dot square, right? Minus 2KS, that seems right. Two. And then of course we have to a zero. All right, so we have all the components we need for this equation then. All right, so we have two equations for our two degrees of freedom. I don't know if this is right.
How do you know if this
is right? Yeah, how do you know? I'm asking you guys. How do we know if this is right?
If we can kind of understand like what's going on at certain values, we can plug those values in and see if it lines up with what we'll be having physically.
Sure, so I think you're thinking in the right lines. I'm not inclined to say certain values, but I think what you're thinking is on the right lines in certain kind of conditions, operating regimes, right? So maybe we can fix theta dot, right? And okay, if I hold this exactly fixed, does this system just behave like a mass spring system? Which is what it is if I'm holding the disk fixed. Right? If I hold this mass fixed, does this system just behave like a disk with some inertia being acted on by a torque? And let's look at the first case. If we hold theta fixed, right, this term goes away, that term goes away, we have a second order harmonic oscillator. This is a question. With a spring constant of 2k, that's exactly what we would expect there. If we don't let S vary, when S dot goes away, that term goes away, we have this guy. Well, this is just a contribution to the total system moment of inertia by this little mass out here in addition to the disk mass. So we have some moment of inertia, theta double dot, is equal to the torque if S is not moving, if that mass is not moving. That makes sense too. So that gives us a check for each one of those coordinates independently. Doesn't tell us that it's right, but it starts giving us a little bit of confidence that what we have is right. Right? We're, of course, missling. Like, it's no way for us to check those coupling terms doing it that way. Right? And as systems get more complex, those terms become more and more important to the actual response. But you can start developing some confidence, maybe, that the things are right by checking these simple cases when you have them. All right. Questions about that one?
For this problem, are we saying, like, when we started, were we saying that we could, like, the torque rotates the entire disk around together, like, the whole system? Or could we have possibly defined it just using theta? Because wouldn't the mass spring always kind of act the same way and under certain conditions, under certain theta dots and theta double dots?
That's not going to be true for all time.
Okay. Like, I mean, like, I understand, like, if we, like, held the mass in place, or if we took the mass and, like, kind of sure. moved it ourselves, but if we weren't doing that, would that have worked?
No.
Okay.
Is a short answer.
Okay.
Because that's not going to be the case for all time, for all initial conditions,
okay.
for all different torques. Right? And furthermore, this motion of the mass can dictate how much torque you need to spin at a certain rate.
Okay.
Right? This mass influences the disk as well. It's not just a one-way relationship. So you can't do that, basically. The other check on that is, how many degrees of freedom does the system have? It's got 2 degrees of freedom. Right, we need to know the angle of this disk, and we need to know where that guy is in the slot to be able to unambiguously position the system. So that means we're going to need 2 equations of motion to describe those 2 degrees of freedom.
I think when I was thinking that, I was thinking that the torque was constant, like we were just applying some torque.
No, yeah, so this is time variable, you don't know what it is.
Now that you say that, that
makes sense. I think that's a little bit of a common mistake, is to take something in a, you know, going down the road of special cases and then kind of taking a half step too far. Like, I can simplify this if this is constant or that's constant, and making assumptions that maybe don't hold for all time. Right? I see that, and particularly in the kind of the vibrations, upper, you know, senior level vibrations class I teach, people assume a certain configuration because that's how the thing started. Well, it's not always that. We need to write the general form of the equations of motion that are valid for all time, generally, not just that instant, which these are. Other questions? All right, let's work some more examples. Okay, this is, I think, not in your book. There may be one like this hidden somewhere, but it's not explicitly taken from your book, at least. Okay, we have, in this case, perfect pin joint there. Suspending a point mass, we're going to call M. Okay. This guy is K. Naught is the equilibrium spring length. And let's call, we got a few coordinates, and then maybe we can set this up independently and then discuss. Let's call that theta. Call that distance r from the pin down to mass m. Why don't you guys take just a minute and try to set this up? So where do we start? Every problem, where do we start every problem we're talking about? Coordinate frames, what should I choose? What's a good choice? So you're saying something like this, call that small xy maybe. Any other recommendations? Why this, but why that way? Still fixed to the rotating with the pendulum? So the
why
so
would
ours,
you choose y to go up?
Why would you choose y to go up?
So theta dot was positive too.
If y positive down, then you have positive r dots in the positive y. So you kind of either way, be fine either way. Any other? We're gonna need any other frames? Fixed frame, and you probably should match the fixed frame. So if you go y up here, you should do y up there. Or if you're going y down, which is what I did actually. Should do that way. Okay. I actually wrote, and maybe this is another reason you did this. Tell me. I wrote. Which can serve as the same function of this guy, I think. We'll see in just a second. Okay. What else do I need to do here? Some kind of free body diagram, yes. So I have some mass. We could draw the pen if we want, but we care about that. What kind of forces do I have on the mass?
Gravity and spring.
Gravity and spring. G. And we'll draw it in that direction, but that direction varies, right? Okay. What's next? Pick some generalized coordinates. Sure, we can go that route. What's a choice? Theta. Theta is probably one of them. How many degrees of freedom do we have here?
Two.
Two. Okay, so theta, what's the maybe natural complement to theta? R and theta, yeah. So let's see, I put them R theta. What are some other choices? I agree, this is probably the most natural one for this problem, but what are some other choices?
Rather than total length, you could define just the stretch in the spring.
Yeah, so you could define, and in fact we're going to do that in about 10 minutes, I think, some extension of the spring from its equilibrium length.
Kind of like the S.
Yeah, that's right. You, of course, could write just x, y of this m if you wanted to. Well, that's going to be a good choice because you're going to have to kind of go through this anyway to get to that those velocities, but you could do that if you wanted. Just trying to reiterate that you have a choice in what these generalized coordinates are. All right, and I think you guys did a good job of picking the most natural one here. Okay? What's next?
Energies.
All right. So let's start kinetic energy, I suppose. What kind of kinetic energy do I have?
Translation along the r direction, or y direction.
Okay. Which is what?
Just total velocity. So you first need V, whatever you want to call that point, VM.
Yeah, let's call it VM. So I need this. That's the total. We have a point mass. That's all we got, right?
So is that pretty standard? V dot.
Yes, okay. For translational motion. Okay. So if it was a body, if this was a rigid body down here, you have to include the rotation. All right. So velocity in the center of mass. That with itself plus the rotation about it. Center.
Okay.
So what's the velocity of that point?
The rate of change of the
rate of change of the position? Yeah, that's generally true. Okay. So we got some r theta dot happening somewhere. So there's r theta dot happening there somewhere in some kind of direction. What direction is that in? Yeah, you could say it's I, or you could say it's e theta. Let's match the notes and go e theta. Okay, I've obviously left some space there for something else.
R dot,
right. What direction is r dot in? ER or minus J, if we use the XJ. Remember, you got to write the total. This has to be the total velocity so that I get the total kinetic energy. Right, so T is then once I do that dot product. So there's our kinetic energy. What's next? Potential, the other one, sure. What kind of potential do I have? I have some spring potential. What else do I have? Some kind of gravitational potential. If I'm going to define some gravitational potential energy, what do I need to do?
Datum.
Yeah, set someplace where that potential is zero. It's our datum, gravitational datum. What's a good choice here? Yeah, the pen, I think. And I will, again, even if I'm doing this for my own research, I will usually make that explicit and draw it in the figure. I can come back to this 6 months from now and know where I picked. You know where I picked. Sorry. Okay, so let's look at that term first then. Gravitational potential, if you pick that as our datum, is what? MGR sine theta?
Minus MGR cosine theta.
Okay. Why minus?
It's below the datum.
It's below the datum. Okay. So that's the gravitational potential, spring potential. Okay, we know it's got to be that. Well, we need to figure out what delta is. Displacement from his equilibrium for this spring. What is that? R minus L naught minus R. Actually, it turns out not to matter so much. That. So then our total potential energy so our Lagrangian is then just those. We got that taken care of. We won't waste our time rewriting those things. Do we have any non-conservative external forces here? Those all around? That's right. The only kind of external force we really have is gravity. Well, we have forces, gravity and spring. They're both conservative, so they're both taken care of in the potential. So that tells us that, hey, both of our generalized forces are zero. We're going to get zeros on the right-hand side of that Lagrange's equation. Okay. Again, we just need to solve Lagrange's equation for our two generalized coordinates, right? So n equals 0 because Q1 is 0. Equals 0 because Q2 is 0. Then we can walk through that math. Trust that you guys can do it. Let's reorder that, sorry. Right, and there's no more order. There are two equations. Two degree of freedom, two equations of motion. How do we know if this is right?
We could fix R, and then if it looks like a regular pendulum.
Okay. Fix R. Does it look like a regular pendulum? So if you fix R, our dot goes away. Does that look like a pendulum to you guys?
Yes.
Sure does. Good. What else could we do? Another really easy case here to look at.
Zero.
Yeah. No motion in theta, let theta be zero. So that goes away. You have just gravity. Okay. Is that a mass hanging from a spring in 1 degree of freedom? Yeah, it sure is. So the two kind of simple cases we can check, we got answers for, they seem to work pretty well. Of course, That doesn't prove that it's right, but again, we start developing some confidence that we may be at least pretty close to right. Questions about that example?
Well, what's the reason you said it equals zero again? Because initially,
so we don't have any generalized forces. So the two forces acting on this mass are both conservative. So they were included in the potential. Which is almost always the easier way to handle conservative forces if you can do that. So I think a good exercise, just to kind of reiterate for these kind of problems, is hey, we picked, and I worked it out, ER, E theta, work it out, X, Y, you should get the exact same equation of motion. Equation of motion are property of system, they're not coordinate system dependent. So if you work small X, Y, you get that. Work small X, Y, work from the fixed frame maybe, you should get the same equations of motion. Do this with Newton-Euler. You should get the same equations of motion. All right. Questions? I'm going to leave those two equations up because we're going to talk about one other little point. Get rid of that. Okay, if I wanted to simulate this system, I want to take these equations of motion, either generate it through SymPy or you solve them yourself, get them into a script and actually simulate the motion for some initial conditions or something like that over time. So maybe I displace the pendulum some theta naught and r is r naught and I let it go. I want to know how it moves. How do I take these equations and get to that? At kind of a high level. Any ideas? You guys better have ideas. Yeah. Yeah, teach us. If you know it, teach us.
Well, we have to set it up as like our state space equations.
Sure. So strictly speaking, it wouldn't be state space because it's nonlinear. But what does that state space give you? You're thinking in the right direction. So I have a system here. I have two equations of motion. What degree are these? What are these differential equations?
They're second order.
Pretty much every ODE solver, numerical ODE solver on the planet, wants first order differential equations, not second. Right. So we need to take our system of second order differential equations and write it as a system of first order differential equations. And that's a step along the way of getting to true linear state space stuff, which we'll talk about the linear part in a few minutes. So luckily, that's pretty easy for us. Right? So I can define some state vector as x. And generally, you can either, I could do it this way. So I'm going to pick, we did q as r theta, right? Right, so this is generally one case, and this is how controls people tend to do it. Treat each generalized coordinate and its velocity becomes part of the state vector. Okay. We'll see vibrations and dynamics people, and some control algorithms easier to write this way as well. You could write, in our particular case, that, which basically works out to be where the curly brackets kind of indicate the whole state of generalized coordinates. And just like choosing the generalized coordinates themselves, you have some choice over what your state are, as long as they completely represent that system. Then we need to take this guy, and what we want to write is some function of the states themselves, the inputs, and time, possibly. So if I look at this, well, hey, that x dot there, let's look at our particular example. It's r dot. Okay. Well, what is r dot? Well, that's actually just our second state, right? So r dot's r dot. It's actually x2 in this case. We wanted to write this x1 that's going to be x2 n, 2 n minus 1. Okay. Well, what is r double dot? It's x2 dot. X2 dot, well, r double dot is just this equation in motion with the terms gathered all on the right-hand side. So that r2 double equation ends up there. Okay. We look at theta dot, well, that's just x4. Theta double dot is just this equation with the terms collected. Okay. If I do that, now I have a system first order, system of first order differential equations that I'll be able to solve. Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, you should see this in controls. And we'll get to, in just 2 minutes, if this ends up being a linear system, I can write this in matrix form.
There's like multiple methods you could do it. I forgot, but
yeah, there's a few different ways you can get there. So if this is linear, I can write this as x dot. I can write it in matrix form. And now I can do a lot with control design. If I know these matrices, then I can design controllers. This matrix A gives me eigenvalues of my system. Right, so I know the natural frequencies, damping ratios, everything I need to know by just looking at this matrix in terms of the fundamental properties of that system. Okay. So the big question here, the OR, that requires the system to be linear. Okay. How do we get from some nonlinear representation of our equation of motion to a linear one? Linearization. Exactly right. So let's take a look just at our couple of equations here. I'll erase these lines over to there. There are many ways to linearize systems. Okay. In fact, the computationally efficient ways and things like that are still somewhat an active area of research for really complex systems. For simple equations like this, it's a little bit straightforward. Problem, one way you probably learned as an undergraduate, hopefully. How do I get to a linearized set for these equations? There's one decision we have to make first for all linearization. We have to make the decision, where do I want to linearize about? What point in my configuration space am I actually going to linearize about? Generally, that linearization is only valid for small perturbations away from that point. So I have to make some choice. How do I choose that point? Well, one, if I know that my nonlinear robotic arm manipulator is always acting and manipulating objects right at this point, I want to linearize about that point. Right? If I don't have such a point where I'm always kind of operating, right, I might choose some equilibrium condition for my system. Right? And in fact, that's probably what you saw as an undergrad. You're linearizing about a equilibrium position of a pendulum, you get to the square root of g over l as a natural frequency. If I'm going to linearize about an equilibrium, what's the procedure there? How do I know what an equilibrium position is? What the equilibrium, or a equilibrium, or the equilibrium positions, plural? Acceleration is zero. What else is zero? What's the definition of it being in an equilibrium? What does that mean for the motion of the system? If you're at equilibrium. Constant.
It goes back to the same position you were talking about. Every time you add some sort of input to it, it returns.
Sure, if it's a stable system, it'll. If the system's stable, which we're not necessarily guaranteed. System stable, that's where it's going to kind of gather to, if you will. Okay. You said it was a constant, the motion was constant. Strictly speaking, that could be true, I think. Practically speaking, if we're at an equilibrium, exactly at an equilibrium, we should be able to stay there forever without any external influence, right? The internal forces, spring is balancing gravity. Right? Or we're down here, spring balancing gravity, and there's no gravitational resistance. So if we look at it from that perspective, I can come over to this equation and I say, well, if I know I'm at equilibrium, I can get rid of all the motion terms. And then I know then, if I solve these guys for r and theta, I have the equilibrium conditions for this particular system. Okay. So if we start with the second equation, what do we know about theta? If that's going to be true, just zero.
Plus,
yeah, that's how you want to write it. So if that's an equilibrium condition there, we can take this guy here. What's true for a cosine of theta at n pi? Or let's just write it out in general. Right, we know then that you know, that has to be true for that spring kind of R to be in equilibrium, if you will. For whatever theta we choose from below. So we have equilibrium conditions there. All right. Now what we want to do, if we're trying to linearize the system, we can rewrite these states or my generalized coordinates in terms of those now found equilibrium positions. So you're going to rewrite your generalized coordinates as a small perturbation away from the equilibrium. Okay. If we call the solution of this, let's call that R naught, that kind of R equilibrium length that corresponds to theta naught. Okay. So what I want to do is take R and it's R naught plus some small perturbation in R, which we'll call eta 1. That's a zeta, isn't it? Let's make it a small thing. Right. And I'm going to say, well, let theta be it's the equilibrium plus some small perturbation away from it. Then you want to take these definitions, plug back into your equation of motion with the motion terms now kind of enabled, and basically rewrite. You're going to rewrite your equations in terms of those two deviations from the equilibrium. Okay, everybody following that general idea at least? And this is just, again, this is one method that tends to be pretty straightforward. All right. If I do that, the math, intermediate steps for those are in the notes. I don't know that it's really worth it to go through that. But if we get to linearizing, let's take theta naught equals 0, right? And then we'll pick r naught according to that angle. All right. What we'll see is that then the equilibrium of r is where the spring force balances gravity at theta equals 0. Right. So if you make this and do the math, dot, 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 you're going to come up with two linearized equations of motion. One of which is that. Second of which should be just G, right? Yes. Do those seem right to you? If I have linearized, if I have really small perturbations about theta 0 and an equilibrium where gravity was balancing the spring force. Yes? No? Seems very simple. That's going to happen. Right?
I said it seems reasonable.
Oh, okay. Seems very simple. It's true, though. Right? You're basically, when you're linearizing stuff, you're ignoring information. And it may be information you can ignore, and it's safe to ignore, depending on the precision you need with your solution. But we're ignoring, we don't have any coupling between these things now. Right, so we're saying, hey, this theta motion doesn't impact R at all. And if we're at around zero, in really small motion around zero, that's kind of true. What does this look like? Equation. It's a mass spring. Okay, is that reasonable? If we have spring force balancing gravity, we're riding the motion of that mass away from equilibrium in R. Yeah, that seems right to me. Right, that's the case we just talked through. That's a simple example case. How about this guy? What does this look like?
Still a pendulum.
Yeah, it's just a pendulum. Right? So small perturbations in theta, I get just pendulum motion. Makes sense? Right. But we lose all the coupling between the two for the full nonlinear system, which may or may not be important for what you're doing. So you could take, if you're trying to get to a linear form, you could take this, do this same procedure, and get into a form, this function you should be able to write as a matrix equation. And solving this linear system is way faster than solving that nonlinear one. Okay. Questions about that general kind of high-level procedure? SymPy actually has, sorry to cut you off your questions if you had them. SymPy actually has a linearized method built into it. Right, when you're forming an equation in motion, and we'll use that, where you can say, hey, linearize, I have this system of equations that were generated by SymPy's kind of either Kane's method or Lagrange or whatever. Now put some equations in motion, you can say, hey, linearize those about some point of my choosing. And it will attempt to do so. And it usually does a pretty good job. Questions about that? Okay, I'm not sure we have really time to work through the next couple examples. I will still post these. I got a bunch more. I'll still post these today, so you guys have them to look through. And then we'll resume. There's one more small piece of chapter 7, and then we'll be chapter 8 stuff starting a week from today. And it looks at chapter 8, the first part of chapter 8 is looking at Lagrange's equations when I have to include constraints, or want to include constraints. So non-holonomic systems, or I want to include the constraints because I want information maybe about states that are not part of the minimum set. And then we'll get to, following that, hopefully Kane's method and some other analytical methods that are useful to at least know about, even if we don't get to a lot of detail in those. Okay. If you have questions between now and Thursday, feel free to stop by, email, all those things.